Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. From Park City to the national stage, Pale Blue Batteries is rethinking one of the most ordinary and wasteful products in our daily lives, the battery. Founded in 2018 by Tom Bishop, Pale Blue set out to replace disposable batteries with high-performance rechargeable alternatives designed to be reused hundreds of times, keeping thousands of single-use batteries out of the landfills.
What began as a sustainability-driven startup has quickly grown into something much bigger. Pale Blue batteries are now sold at REI stores nationwide and are being adapted now for rugged military-grade use and have even made their way, in a big way, into the music world. Today, we sit down with founder Tom Bishop to talk about the company's origin story, its environmental mission, and how a local Park City idea is powering everything from outdoor adventures to defense technology and changing how we think about energy along the way. Tom Bishop, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks, Lynn and Scott. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Well, you know, I've heard mention of this company called Pale Blue around town, but suddenly it's become more often that I've heard Pale Blue, Pale Blue. Tell us, why did you start it?
Yeah, we saw an opportunity to address an issue that was kind of getting larger in our own lives as parents of young kids started to see the problem with single-use batteries, and then just kind of reflecting on the state of affairs in all of the electronics world. Consumer electronics is where most of us spent our careers, and you could see the progress in, especially in cell phones. I think lithium-ion batteries were really taking off and becoming dominant, and there was so much innovation in R&D dollars going into them. They were just getting better faster. And it seemed to us that rechargeable batteries was the best way to power our lives, but no one was really moving beyond alkaline batteries. We just saw the opportunity that if someone made a really great rechargeable battery, everyone would move beyond single-use batteries pretty quickly.
Do you think it's true that the quote-unquote battery problem, that we haven't figured out really how to get batteries efficiently store energy? I would call that the question of our time, but rechargeable batteries in some imperfect way have been around a long time. What role do rechargeable batteries play in all of this?
Yeah, great question. There's a number of chemistries that came along that made recharging possible, but they all were underperforming in some way. They're unreliable or took long charging times or kind of complicated charging solutions. And so I think that part of the problem was chemistry related, and part of it was just adoption due to the lack of a real reliable solution. Lithium ion is the first chemistry that came along that made it possible to, through another decade or so of innovation to get to true reliability, where you could plug in the battery and charge it quickly, but then you could really trust that it was going to perform for you. And being able to charge anywhere quickly through USB really changed the game. Mobility was one of the major drivers in battery innovation, the iPod and the iPhone and these mobile devices, and being able to charge on the go. So you got a combination of factors: increased reliability, increased convenience around mobility. And that really has changed things, except in one notable space, the household battery. If you walk into a retail store, you'll see just so many alkaline batteries for sale that it's surprising that industry has continued to dominate. But I understand why. At first glance, it seems very strange to have such a large market in single-use batteries still.
Well, I'm guilty as charged. It's one of those things, like, at the end of the day, all I want is a piece of chocolate cake, and then I regret ever eating it. So when I go into a store and I buy those alkaline batteries and I get them home, I don't feel like kicking myself, for not kind of doing my share, but it is so convenient. But I am fascinated by your story and would love to become a convert. But tell me, I'm really fascinated by your growth trajectory. I mean, you went from Kickstarter to the retail industry with REI. How did that path grow so quickly?
Yeah, I appreciate the battery pun, though. You didn't even notice it, but guilty as charged. The battery puns write themselves.
I intend by puns.
Yeah, I try my best. We're all guilty as charged. Everyone needs batteries. And generally, when you need one right now or very soon. And that's kind of where single-use batteries are the ultimate convenience. If you have some around, you can just grab them and go. The journey for us started with that Kickstarter because one fundamental question needed to be answered, and that was, were we absolutely crazy for bringing a very expensive battery into a very commoditized space? And so to do what we do is requires quite a bit of electronics on board. The batteries are expensive by nature of them relative to alkaline. And so the Kickstarter was the beginning of the journey just to validate that, you know, we weren't crazy because we knew we wanted the product, but we didn't know if the overall market would respond. And a 4-pack of AAs is $30, which sounds wildly expensive relative to what you pay for an alkaline battery until you realize that you can get your money back pretty quickly. And so the journey was started, we launched right into COVID with the website and Amazon. That was where we started learning about our consumer base. We had all sorts of assumptions in the early days of who our customer would be. Lo and behold, we were wrong on many fronts. So, the journey took us from a direct-to-consumer digital model quickly into international markets, actually. We have a lot of contacts in the international space from working in other global companies like Skullcandy. And so those contacts quickly brought us into a lot of international markets. And then the next stage for us was retail. You know, getting into REI took some doing. Our first largest customer was actually True Value. True Value, Ace, Do It Best, Oracle. These hardware stores are really great to do business with because you can go to their trade shows and meet with store owners, you know, one by one by one, and you can convert them on an individual basis. When you're talking to national retailers, you have to convince a buyer who is making decisions for, you know, hundreds or thousands of stores. And there's a lot of inertia that would prevent them from willingly disrupting their lucrative alkaline battery business. And so we continue to make inroads into retail domestically and internationally. I think on the domestic side, we're somewhere close to 3,000 doors now, continuing to build that footprint, you know, primarily because customers are used to buying batteries in retail. It makes a lot of sense to make sure that we're where they are going when they're ready to make that purchase.
When I think REI, I think obviously camping, but, you know, your batteries are rechargeable through USB, which is pretty cool. I now understand that you also have a solar option.
We do make a couple solar chargers. Yeah, one of the continuing threads in our business has been an interest in helping people spend more time outdoors. We get a lot of screen time. Our kids get a lot of screen time, and outdoors is a place generally where you can relax a little bit, enjoy a little bit, you know, have real conversations with real people in real life. So one of the things that we wanted to make sure people could do was charge their battery anywhere. And then if you're camping or hiking or just outside, you don't necessarily want to bring a power bank, bring a battery to charge your batteries if you need to. We figured it'd be better to have solar chargers that people could, you know, take backpacking or camping and charge their phone and or batteries in the outdoors.
Very cool. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with the founder of Pale Blue Batteries. It's Tom Bishop. He is local as well as is his business, Pale Blue. It's funny, I kind of want to go backwards and go to some definitions. Are people familiar with the type of batteries that are out there? I mean, we've talked a little bit about alkaline batteries and lithium batteries. What other kind of batteries are there for consumer use?
You know, if you walk into any retail store, you'll find 95 to 99% of the batteries in there are going to be alkaline. The convenience of them and the shelf-stable nature of the chemistry makes them great for everyday use. There's another chemistry in there called nickel metal hydride. And so you'll see rechargeable batteries primarily nowadays you've made from this chemistry, nickel metal hydride. And those are the ones that we spoke of earlier that have long charging time, generally have some sort of device that needs to be plugged into an AC outlet that allows you to charge those batteries. And the problems with those chemistries are numerous, but they all add up to kind of a lack of reliability. Although they're specified to be used hundreds of times, generally speaking, if you don't treat them exactly correctly, they might last, you know, a few dozen cycles, which is still a better ROI than you're buying a few dozen single-use batteries, I think. But they tend to disappoint. And I think after a few experiences with that disappointment, people swing back and go straight back to the alkaline battery purchasing, which is why you don't see a large footprint in retail. The retailer's kind of signaling, hey, you're probably better off buying alkaline batteries from us.
Batteries just seem so imperfect. For example, I guess they would be nickel-based batteries. if you think about lights for biking at night, for example, if you don't use those for a while and you don't maintain them in this very exacting way where you keep it plugged in and then you run them down, then you charge them back up, they just die after about a year and they're expensive. So when I go back to, you know, what I call it, or what's in my mind as the battery problem, I'm hoping that Pale Blue batteries are, you know, this is something that you're working on and this is something that you're finding a solution to. Can you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. Every battery can and will lose charge over time if it's just sitting there. Alkaline batteries can generally go decades. There's been enough research and development in them to make them really shelf stable. But other chemistries, you know, maybe a small battery might last 1 to 4 years. And if you don't attend to it or charge it up every once in a while, if it goes too low on its voltage, then it might not recover. And so you can find yourself with a battery that I'm thinking of one in a device that I have that I used once and then it sat on a shelf for a year or so and then didn't come back to life. That's to protect the battery from doing something dangerous. If a battery goes too low voltage for too long, it can become more hazardous. And so there's protections in the electronics on board that can do that, but there's also possibility chemistry just goes so low that the battery becomes effectively useless. And that's across, you know, if you make a broad generalization, any kind of battery, and it's related to the laws of physics. So that one is somewhat, you can't overcome that easily. That being said, there's a lot of things that you can do to make a battery last a lot longer. And so we're doing a lot of work right now to try to make shelf stable batteries that are, you know, like in our space that could last 4, 5, 10 years. And that would be a game changer because when you want the battery, you want it to work now. You don't want to ground it and then realize you have to recharge it again or it doesn't work. So overcoming that hurdle is a really important one for the battery industry. Not so much in the spaces that drive our daily lives, like our phone, you're never going to let it sit for a year. Your electric vehicle is going to get charged more regularly. But the devices that we use sometimes maybe only get used seasonally. Or maybe if you're buying it from someone, a brand sold it and, well, bought it, put it into a warehouse and it sat there for a little while, shipped it to a retailer's warehouse, sat there for a little while, retailer puts it in store, sits there for a little while, customer buys it. You know, that could be a long cycle. So you want to make batteries that are very stable for long periods of time. That's a major initiative for us.
Tom, I have a personal question.
Sure thing.
Was first married, my mother-in-law sent me out to the garage to look in the freezer for something, and there were a whole bunch of alkaline batteries in there. I was kind of questioned, like, what in the world? Frozen batteries. And when I asked, what are all the batteries doing in the freezer? She had explained to me that that's what they did to increase the shelf life of the battery. I'm just curious, did that work or was that just something they had read somewhere? Or
I believe it. I haven't looked deeply into it, but I have heard this. And I actually believe it. I think that you're slowing down the chemical reactions in the battery that would create self-discharge. I don't think that's necessary anymore. The alkaline batteries you see, like some of the brands have, you know, 10-year guarantee and things. They're much more stable than they were back then. So I'm going to hazard a guess that it did make a difference. I don't know how much, maybe it was just incremental improvement, but it does make sense from a physics and material standpoint. I don't think it's necessary anymore. Shouldn't be, but I think I understand the mechanism, and that's just the chemistry. You know, it's colder temperatures, things move slower, chemical reactions happen slower.
Yeah, I'm just glad she never put it in the pot roast. switching gears for just a bit, going from consumer to military, I understand last year, Pale Blue was selected by the Defense Innovative Unit, which we love our acronyms here at Cool Science Radio. We're going to call that the DIU, to prototype military-grade rechargeable batteries under OSCAR. And you're going to have to tell me what that acronym stands for. I don't know. Which is part of DIU's FastBat program. Are you moving also in parallel into the military or defense industry? And if so, what do you see the role of your batteries doing in that space? Pun intended, that one was.
bring them on, Scott. I can head up. The battery that we're working on for the defense is to, in a sense, in parallel to our normal businesses, to replace the reliance on single-use batteries. So a lot of the soldier carried or worn tactical devices use single-use lithium battery that, although pretty good, doesn't perform in a number of ways that would be advantageous. And so we're solving a handful of problems there to make a better rechargeable battery for defense that requires certain advancements in chemistry and electronics and certain work with partners in that space. And when's all said and done, that should not only kind of advance capabilities, domesticated supply chain, which is an important part of it, but also save a lot of money. The number of single-use batteries used is surprisingly large in that space. And the cost of a battery is not the cost of a battery, it's the cost of buying it, managing it, and warehousing it, and delivering it to where it's needed. And so by replacing single-use batteries with a much better rechargeable solution, it's similar to, if you're going camping, you're better off if you're out there to have a battery that you can charge anywhere you happen to be and not have to run to town to get a replacement. So, the acronym soup that I live in nowadays is quite large, but I'll mention Oscar because I think it's a good one. I think I never checked, but I believe it's a reference to the Sesame Street character, Oscar the Grouch. But being that the government loves acronyms, it actually means something. So this is the operational single cell for accessory readiness. It's where Oscar comes from. We hope to use more Sesame Street acronyms in our business going forward, but the number of programs and departments and things going on requires a certain amount of acronym adoption. And we're excited this one seems to be memorable.
Yeah, it's important to keep these complex things on the light side by using Sesame Street characters. I love it. So you also have another really exciting partnership, and this is, has catapulted you into the music scene. You imagine the performance artist out there with the headset on in front of tens of thousands of people performing, and the battery runs out on the headset and there it goes. But you have partnered with Ernie Ball, which is a huge company in the music industry. Talk about that. Is it a similar kind of partnership as you're doing with the defense industry?
Ernie Ball is a third generation family business in the music industry. And, we're involved in the 1960s in development of guitar strings that made rock and roll possible. So really, really deep roots in the music industry and guitar accessories. What they called us, similar to the OD calling us actually, and said, hey, we want to make a better battery for our customer. Everyone in our space relies on single-use batteries, and there's a number of downsides to that, other than just the obvious ones, just the waste and convenience. Alkaline batteries change performance over their cycle. So the voltage goes down and then the performance of the instrument might go down. So if you're playing guitar and it sounds different as the performance goes on, that would not be ideal. And so there's a number of other opportunities in our tech stack, meaning the electronics on our batteries to make those devices perform more optimally. And so for musicians who use a lot of batteries, you've got the guitar and guitar pedals and accessories, you've got the in-ear microphones and monitors, and you've got a lot of, in large performances, you'll have a lot of people backstage wearing wireless microphones. They're all using lots and lots of batteries. And so what we set out to do with those guys was to kind of tap into their industry knowledge to help us be on target for innovation. When you're innovating in a space with as deep of roots and kind of very technical space like music, the real experts know better than you. And it would take us decades to really understand those targets better. So by partnering up with them in the same way that we do in DoD, we can bring our expertise in battery innovation together with their expertise in the customer. And then that means when we're innovating, we're on target from the beginning. And then once you know what your target looks like, it's much easier to do the innovation work at multiple levels of the tech stack to achieve your goal. And so, the Ernie Ball thing was super exciting because we've got quotes in hand from the guitar techs for Miley Cyrus and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Nine Inch Nails and Jack Johnson, all these great musicians who are using our batteries on stage. And as a father of two kids who play music, play piano and bass, and 11-year-old son is in a band, it's just super cool to know that we're helping that industry advance their capabilities, reduce their waste, and improve their performance all at the same time.
Yeah, that's great. You know, to give our listeners sort of an idea of what your batteries look like and how they charge, are they all charging with the USB-C kind of charger that we all know and love? I love the USB-C chargers. It's just all kinds of applications. Are they all charged that way?
Yep. Yeah, they are. We started out long ago with micro USB, and as the world moved to USB-C, all of our products now have a USB-C port on the side of the battery, right towards the, usually right towards the positive terminal, and just plug them in. You know, you can use our cable or any cable and plug them into any charging device, and barring a few very small corner cases where compatibility is looking for some sort of handshake electronically, that has happened occasionally. But barring that, you can plug in any USB cable into anywhere anytime and charge up quick.
Well, Tom, the thing that I am most impressed with is overall, I mean, and there's a lot to be impressed with, but I am genuinely grateful to the ecological impact that your company is making in reducing the waste of alkaline batteries in the landfills. And I think it is just so noble isn't even the right word. It feels like this is just the time to be doing this. So I am very impressed and grateful that you have also, by the way, I understand, have partnered with several other organizations to promote the ecological use of your batteries. Do you want to just touch on that real quick before we wrap?
I appreciate that, Scott. That's where our heart and soul is too. We started the business with a dream of kind of impacting a global market to create more sustainable products and reduce the waste in our own lives. And that has been a pleasure in the glue of the culture of our company and driving force. So from day one, we were signed up with a company, well, an organization called 1% for the Planet. 1% for the Planet is a great organization that allows you to, as a business, commit a percentage of your revenue to nonprofits in the environmental and conservation and sustainability space. And so through that membership, we get to contact all sorts of great organizations, work with them, contribute to their efforts and have an impact. And so some of the ones we work with locally, Swanner Preserve right here in Park City, Recycle Utah up on Kearns, we support those guys. And if you ever have a chance to go in on Thursday morning and meet a woman named Ellen, she's in there sorting the batteries that come from our community so that they can be shipped off to recyclers. And she has to sort every single battery. And you're talking 4 55-gallon drums every 3 or 4 months. She's in there every Thursday, volunteered to do all the sorting for the last 7 or 8 years. So credit to Alan, and shout out to her. Fish for Garbage out of Salt Lake. Fish for Garbage does river cleanups. And so every year we go support them and go out and physically pick up trash on 7, 8, 9 different rivers around. And they collect, I don't know the number, 100,000 pounds, 150,000 pounds of trash every season from the same rivers every year. We, you know, we go back to Lower Provo, and this year we collected 15,000 pounds of trash from the Lower Provo, and I've cleaned up on that river and that section of river for the last 5 years. And so it just keeps coming. You gotta get out there and get it out of the water. So they're a huge part of our program. We've over the years supported Wasatch Trails and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, who's a policy group around public access to public lands. Lots of these organizations, you know, protect our winters. So many. And it, I think the umbrella of 1% for the Planet allows us to put a plan together every year and actualize that plan, put boots on the ground and create relationships. You know, I think back to when we first met the guys at Recycle Utah, and, you know, years later, we're still sponsoring the battery recycling there. And whenever I get a chance to pop in and chat with Ellen, sort some batteries with her, it's a pleasure. And she's a great example of what's possible when people put their mind to it and commit some of their time to having an impact.
Tom, you've touched a very important part of both Lynn's life and my life, and we really, really genuinely appreciate it. We've been speaking with Tom Bishop, founder and chief executive officer of Pale Blue Batteries. Tom, thank you so much for being here on Cool Science Radio with us.
My pleasure, Scott. I appreciate you guys.